You could almost smell the jet fumes in Washington this week as hundreds of lawmakers wrapped up congressional business and flew home to their districts. After a couple of late-night sessions, Congress managed to fund the federal government for the year, including an injection of cash for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. The gavel that ended that session this week also closed the first year of the new Democratic majority in Congress under Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid and the new House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. It was supposed to be a year of bipartisan cooperation, at least if you believed Pelosi and President Bush when they met at the Democrats' retreat back in early February.
Let's make no mistake. The choice is bipartisanship or stalemate. We have a majority in the Congress. The president has the signature. And we have to work together to pass legislation that has sustainable remedies to the challenges that face the American people. And so we will.
And I agree, Madam Speaker, there's a chance to show people that we can get beyond the politics of Washington, D.C., that we're able to treat each other with civility and at the same time accomplish big goals.
So how did they do? In terms of substance, Congress did get a fair amount done. In their first weeks in the majority, the Democrats passed bills to beef up the student loan program, instate the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission, and increase the minimum wage. But on many, many issues, Congress was engaged in rancorous, sometimes furious, political battles. The war, wiretapping laws, the definition of torture. Two issues in particular show the limits of bipartisanship in this Congress: the State Children's Health Insurance Program, or SCHIP, and immigration reform. Both of these, to some extent, cut across party lines. John Bresnahan is the Capitol Bureau chief for the Politico newspaper. It covers politics for Washington insiders. And he says the immigration debate really showed how deep partisan passions run.
You know, you had President Bush on the side of the Democrats on this one.
Right.
The rare issue where Bush and the Democratic leadership are aligned. You had McCain with Bush, but then Senator McConnell, minority leader, opposed the president on this issue. And then you had talk radio and the blogs just pounded Republicans.
Conservatives.
They just killed them. And there was, by the end of the debate, there was no way anybody could line up on where Bush was and hope to have any support from the base in 2008. You see, look where the Republican presidential candidates are.
In the end, immigration went exactly nowhere. An expansion of the state children's health insurance program made more progress this year, says Bresnahan, because Democrats and Republicans in Congress mostly agree. But it still ended up in the same place, nowhere, because President Bush vetoed it twice. So what does all this mean for that early, lofty goal?
The idea of bipartisanship right now is dead. There is none. I've covered Congress for 13 years. I've never seen relations so bad between the parties.
For a little more historical perspective, we turn to political science professor Ross Baker. He's at Rutgers University. How are you, Professor Baker?
Fine, Andrea. How are you?
Good, thanks. We just heard from John Bresnahan of the Politico. He's never seen more acrimony than this year. Ross Baker, you've watched a lot longer than that. What do you think?
Well, it's bad, but it's been worse. But you have to go back a long way to, you know, the duels and various floor scuffles in the 19th century or the terrible atmosphere that was in Congress in the 1950s during the McCarthy period. But this doesn't rank with the worst, but it certainly wasn't good.
Washington had high hopes for bipartisanship for this year. What happened?
Well, I think perhaps the Democrats were overly optimistic. I mean, they certainly came out of the 2006 election quite properly in a kind of celebratory mood. And I think the feeling was that now they could set the agenda, they could drive policy and so on. And I think there was a tendency to believe that the president had been fatally wounded and that somehow the Republicans, basically hoping to distance themselves from the president in terms of their own political survival, would be more cooperative or at least docile. It turned out not to be the case at all. You know, the president seemed in some ways to be a symbol around which Republicans rallied. But I think you really have to kind of look at the situation in much broader terms. In that the fact that Congress exists in the context of the political constituencies out there among the voters. And a great deal of what happens in Washington is really being driven by the base groups in both parties, very liberal Democrats, very conservative Republicans. Members of Congress hear from these people.
Ross Baker, this is not the first time that there has been a divided government. How does this compare? I mean, President Clinton had a Republican Congress.
Well, it's very interesting because President Clinton offered Republicans in Congress, which were the majority party after the 1994 election, certain proposals that the Republicans found very congenial. Primary one was welfare reform, and which the Republicans could sign on to. It's something they've been arguing for a long time. So basically what happened was that President Clinton preempted some of the Republicans' agenda, put his own label on it, and basically got credit for it. It's a very different situation with President Bush. And really the entire dialogue between the president and Democrats in Congress was framed by the Iraq War. And this was a situation in which the Democrats were under tremendous amount of pressure to do something quickly, to extricate the troops from Iraq. The president, on the other hand, just didn't want to give ground. And I think that the president, depending on your perspective, was either intransigent or stalwart in trying to fend this off. So I think that there was a basic difference of opinion that was so fundamental, a kind of polarization between the Democrats in Congress and the president, that cooperation on anything really important was unlikely.
Are there other examples that you can think of that might be illuminating other than the Clinton presidency?
Sure. You know, I think in some ways the model of divided government was when Dwight Eisenhower was in the White House and Lyndon Johnson was the majority leader in the Senate. Hmm. President Eisenhower is a very different person than President Bush. He was much more willing to accommodate the needs of members of Congress, and I think basically had much greater respect for the institution of Congress. President Bush's father famously, of course, reached out to Congress in 1989 when he first came in, tried to make friends with some of the Democrats in the House of Representatives. And although the relationship was typically one of tension, as it should be under a system of checks and balances, nonetheless, I think that there was mutual respect. I think what makes this situation different is I think the president considers Congress something of a constitutional annoyance. And I think if you approach an institution that way, I think its leaders are going to be predictably unfriendly.
Professor Ross Baker, professor of political science at Rutgers University. Thanks very much, sir.
Thank you, Andrea.
Up next, what the Army did to meet its recruitment goals and what that does to the Army. It's All Things Considered.